our readings today. One of them is just a quote that has it that I got this week, and I just have to share it with you so it'll be in your mind and in the conversation as we go through our days. And it's by the Reverend Dr. William J. Barber II. He says, "If love does not drive out the fears that so easily divide us, we will never gather together in coalitions strong enough to challenge those who benefit from injustice." If love does not drive out the fears that so easily divide us, we will never gather together in coalitions strong enough to challenge those who benefit from injustice. My first reading is from the Reverend Carl Scovell, who is retired from being the Unitarian Universalist minister at King's Chapel in Boston. And this is from the Berry Street essay, the lecture of the conference at Berry Street that was delivered at the General Assembly in 1994. This is a part of it. What is spirituality? As I hear the word being used, it speaks to me, first of all, of an individual yearning for and reaching for some experience and some conviction of that which is greater than self, yet fulfilling of self. Let us remember that this yearning and longing does not per se create faith. The desire itself does not bring fulfillment. The hunger does not automatically lead to fullness. The longing, the desire, and the hunger must be focused and answered with some form if they are to grow in the life of the Spirit. And then he goes on, and then he says, after what is this long, as he calls it, prolegomena? Where does this lead? And it leads to what he calls the great surmise. Some things we do not surmise, but know, and he lists them. We know that we are finite. We have an end. We know that behind every discovery and disclosure lies a mystery. And he goes to say, these things we know: mystery, energy, order, fate, freedom, finitude, but together they do not constitute a system of meaning. They do not constitute a faith. We also know that spirituality is not simply the product of fear, frustration, or bad digestion. There's a real connection to that. We know that our yearning for meaning and fulfillment is given in our very being. So follow that yearning, need, reaching to its source, to our creation, to our createdness, and then surmise with me, if you will, that this yearning, this reaching, is a reflection of that reality from which we come. The great surmise says simply this: at the heart of all creation lies a good intent, a purposeful goodness, from which we come, by which we live our fullest, to which we shall at last return. And this is the supreme reality of our lives. This goodness is ultimate, not fate nor freedom, not mystery, energy, order, nor finitude, but this good intent in creation is our source, our center, and our destiny. Our work on earth is to explore, enjoy, and share this goodness, and to know it without reserve or hesitation. He goes on to say that too much of a good thing, said Mae West, is wonderful. He says that's sound doctrine. And he says the great surmise stands all our logic and morality on its ear. Neither duty, nor suffering, nor progress, nor conflict, not even survival, is the aim of life, but joy. Neither duty, nor suffering, nor progress, nor conflict, not even survival, is the aim of life, but joy. Deep, abiding, uncompromised joy. And our second reading is from W.H. Murray, William Hutchinson Murray. And he's a mountain climber and a Scottish author. And this is from the Scottish Himalaya Expedition write-up, his book from 1951. It's on a plaque or a framed writing on my wall. Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans, that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. A whole stream of events issues from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents, meetings, and material assistance, which no man could have dreamt would have come his way. I learned a deep respect for one of Goethe's couplets. Whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. It turns out that when you look up that couplet, that's a loose translation, and it's actually Goethe talking to a poet and saying, while you're thinking about this and considering it and running this all around in your head, just sit down with a blank sheet of paper and put it on that, because then making that commitment, the poetry will come out. So rather than think about it in terms of the Scottish Himalayan expedition and putting down their passage money and booking a sailing to Bombay, you can think about sitting down and writing that poem, giving words to that action. Whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. This Thursday, I received an email from Meadville Theological School announcing that Professor Sharon Welch was resigning after 10 years as provost. She was resigning in order to return to full-time teaching. She was a professor when I was in divinity school, and her teaching and writing are central to my understandings of how to be engaged, or for how to be engaged in the world, and how to maintain that engagement. In 1990, she wrote A Feminist Ethic of Risk, in which she made the theological and ethical case for a sustained relational ethos of engagement and risk, risk of comfort, of station, for love, justice, connection, and compassion. Joy of commitment and love and the larger belonging are central to her work. It's deep, life-affirming joy. At one point, she even uses the phrase mature, costly joy. In her letter this week, in which she shares her renewed commitment, her call to teaching, and in so doing describes the response that she sees as needed for our times, she names joy twice in two paragraphs. We are in a struggle for all that we hold dear, she says, interdependence, compassion, respect for all human beings, and stewardship of the natural world that sustains us. She then holds up a way of being or of orienting ourselves that she says is in line with what many of us hold dear. What she calls, remember this phrase, the deep joy of generative interdependence. The equal value of curiosity, freedom, connection, and responsibility to each other and to a larger common good. These are values that many of us live in our families, religious communities, businesses, and political lives. At this time in our history, I see my gifts best expressed in teaching Unitarian Universalist religious leaders, that is, all of us, to do what? To work together with all our fellow citizens to keep alive the promise of freedom, the joy of compassion and cooperation, and the very soul of democracy. As Unitarian Universalists, we have much to offer at this moment in history. We have long championed the power of generative interdependence and can now play a leadership role in restoring the basic forms of democracy that are necessary for the maintenance of justice, equity, and compassion. The joy of compassion and cooperation. Not the burden, the joy of compassion and cooperation. The deep joy of generative interdependence. This Sunday's reflection title started as an idea that I could sense but couldn't really put into words. And so some of you are going to grimace and go, oh, he's still struggling to put it into words. But I know that somehow joy and commitment overlap, and they affect each other. I know they are in relationship. The joy I'm thinking of is not superficial or sentimental. It is deeper than happiness. There is a rightness to it, a felt sense of right relationship with life and your own life as being right in the bigger picture. It may be a moment, it may be an attitude. Commitment here is not just to make a commitment, but to commit ourselves, something of ourselves, in right relationship. Not separate, not held back, not hesitating, but participating our lives and time to something larger than ourselves, but to which we know we belong. The yearning and searching of our spirit find a place to dwell, and we sense the rightness of it, even if we don't have words for it. That's the joy of commitment. Our theme materials for our Soul Matters discussion groups in March are on risk. And one of the articles is on the warrior tradition, conquering fear. It makes this distinction of separation and hesitation by talking about doubt. Doubt is the first obstacle to fearlessness that has to be overcome. We are referring here to overcoming a much more basic doubt, which is fundamentally doubting yourself and feeling that you have some kind of shortcoming as a human being. I know that none of you experience that. It's just me that responds to this reading. Fundamentally doubting yourself and feeling that you have some kind of shortcoming as a human being. You don't feel that your body and mind are synchronized. You feel that you are constantly being shortchanged somewhere in your life. We may feel this as a chronic sense of disconnection from ourselves and who we should or want to be. In this sense, we are walking around always not good enough and one step short of belonging. In today's reading, Reverend Scovell defines spirituality as a yearning to what? To reach across this separation. That's the seeking of seekers. Our attraction to what we call spirituality is our search for wholeness. And joy is the feeling that comes with those moments of felt wholeness and rightness with who we are, however big or small the moment might be. It is the feeling of being connected and rightfully in place with the larger life force, not being separated from right relationship with life, from ourselves, and from our calling to others. In joyful moments, we are actually experiencing some of the feeling that we belong, and we feel how we belong. Moments of joy are signs to and of our belonging. I actually wrote here, in my notes, I wrote, we be our longingness. Joy comes from a felt connection in a moment. It can also have that larger sense of trust or a pervasive background sense that it is there and somehow moves with you and you are moving in it. I think of it as the force of creation and life that is always trying to push through. It's kind of my biological background in that. We are living creatures who feel right when we are living in right relationship with life and the life force that has created us, and joy. Real, wholehearted, life-connected joy is our cue that we're there, but also our attractor to wanting to be there. In framing his surmise, Reverend Scovell is very intentional about naming this source of, as he calls it, this goodness or good intent at the heart of the universe as divine love. That's his framing. I really like generative interdependence. Committing ourselves to that vision and guiding understanding then makes deep joy real and a real possibility. I think we can start our larger orientation to life and love from the rather obvious fact that each of us sitting here is alive. Maybe there are a few exceptions. But we are participating in the energy and gift of life. We're actually participating in that gift of creation. I would say that we must notice and value and use our gifts, then to support and work as we are able in and for that inclusive goodness. Commitment, joy, belonging, meaning. We connect with goodness not by holding back, but by exploring, enjoying, sharing this connection with each other in life without what? Without reserve or hesitation, and without giving in to the thoughts that we aren't enough, or our efforts are not right, or too small, so why should I take them? We are, after all we have, and this is how we are to live, joyfully. There's no other way. Through our commitments, committing ourselves to that which is larger than ourselves, but fully us. So when I hear W.H. Murray quote, "When one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too," I hear it with a sense of commitment that is in the flow of life and love and justice and compassion and right relationship. I understand providence is that which awakens us to and with a joyous sense of that belonging and hopefulness. We become more aware to all that is around us. In my write-up for this Sunday, I said, take action, lift despair, empower grace. So somewhere in your life, make a commitment that fits you. Something that gives you joy, even in the sense of gentle feelings or small smiles. It could be a commitment in just one something in your day. Then take that word enjoy and separate it. In joy. Put joy into it and notice it. Participate in hope. Both the hope that the future will be made different through your actions and the hope that trusts in life and the life-giving connections that you are living and giving them value and power. And then what you are doing will actually create the opportunity for this grace to make everything be more than the imagined sum of your efforts. It's not necessarily an energy from the outside, but most definitely, as Sharon Welch would say, the possibility of a greater total effect than we imagine that actually just comes from our contributions and commitments that are in the service of love and life and justice. Susan Holt, who I didn't see this morning, but in our Soul Matters group, was sharing, she had this quote on her mirror. She thought it was from Rilke or Hafez, but then she couldn't find who wrote it, but it's right where she looks every day. And she says, "Take one step and God will take 1,000. Such is the generosity of God." The real life examples or applications of this frame of the joy of commitment can be large with obviously profound consequences, or they can be smaller and daily with seemingly less dramatic moments of notice. And in our dramatic culture, we fail to notice them. We also discount them for what they aren't and fail to give them value. But I've spoken before about how 25 years ago, given my field of study and my background in ecology and work experience in conservation biology, I could not see beyond the effects of climate change. I was not hopeful enough to become a parent, or more clearly, to want such a future for a child. But once I realized that joy and hope, as we've described them, are present, once I realized that they existed there and here, and they existed for, as it turned out to be, her, to experience and live from and make more of, I made the commitment. But I couldn't make it before that. I would say that providence moved. All manner of unforeseen incidences that I could never have dreamt came my way. And so how, over the years, have I described being a parent? How have I summed it up? The phrase I use, it's the most joy and the most work of anything I've ever known. Joy, commitment. And I would never have missed it for the world. I'm so glad this turned out to be my path and that I found that way of committing. 3 weeks ago, Amy Parrish and Meg Hope shared how they had each taken their more recent feelings of concern And I wouldn't say feelings of helplessness so much as their initial scramble for opportunity and turn them into creative acts of engagement and voices for justice, compassion, and inclusivity. They committed time and space in their busy lives and the emotional courage of leadership. They made opportunity for others. They created the space for grace. You could hear the joy in their stories and in their voices. A person with more experience than Amy encouraged her to go ahead with her idea for progressive organized women, saying what? Saying, go ahead, it will be fun. And Amy went ahead, and she said it was fun. I'm not sure what she says now, but it was fun. And Meg shared how she established postcard writing gatherings to write to your governing people, Congress people, anybody. And she established them at the Sanctuary Brewery. We have to say brewery to distinguish it from this room. Because I said we're meeting in the sanctuary and people showed up here. This Friday, Meg had to leave the, or last Friday, Meg had to leave the worship team meeting early to set up for the writing gathering that started at 4. But before she left, she talked about it, about all the help that she was receiving and how the event had grown and become more than she had imagined. All the people that had joined in, the many layers of effect, she said. She held up moments of beauty, of art, of connection, of community. You could hear and feel the joy in her voice and her laughter. They came from where? Her commitment. Both Amy and Meg shared how what was happening, the ripples, were more than they could have imagined. How graceful and joyful is that? Another example from this week of everything I talked about this morning is that your board voted to display a banner on the front of the building that shows what we hold dear: interdependence, compassion, respect for all human beings. You could imagine our values, our mission, our message on the front of the sanctuary, this sanctuary, not the brewery. They had a good discussion of risks and concerns. They made then a commitment to do it, to go ahead and do it. It felt right. It felt quietly joyful. We actually touched that deep joy of generative interdependence. I smile thinking about it. I made a copy of it. Imagine 6 foot by 12 foot, rainbow colors off the end of the building. The board said, well, we did that, and I went, and I was so happy about it, I talked about it. And then someone who heard me talking about it expressed their concern, and rightfully so, that such a decision needs more congregational input and discussion. The board said, fine, and then it probably does, and they made the space for more input. But I hope we commit, I have to say that, to hang this banner so we can feel the joy together and share it for others too. Sharon Welch says, we have to make the valued real. We have to make the valued real. Our values are not eternal guarantees of right decisions or of proper analyses. They're calls to action. With disabilities, I'll read it. See how different it feels when I put it in the envelope. I'm not kidding. That's okay, not the words, just even the colors. Now it's in the envelope to be put away. If you take it out, it says, we love our neighbors, immigrant, LGBTQ, of color, with disabilities, of all and any faiths. 12-foot by 6-foot. Rainbow colors. See the difference between making the commitment and having it out there and keeping it in the envelope. Yes, this is Commitment Sunday. Chuck Elston said, no kidding, with a title like that, you know, this is obviously Pledge Sunday. People are not going to show up. But it's about making what we value real. Making real this space for grace, this place where we work together with all our fellow citizens, with all our fellow citizens, to help keep alive the promise of freedom, the joy of compassion and cooperation, and then our efforts become more than we imagined. As Professor Welch said in responding to her call and commitment, at this time in our history as Unitarian Universalists, we have much to offer, so let's offer it. What is our mantra? Meeting people where they are with what? With what we have to offer. Let's offer it. At this time in our history, let's offer it. Our orientation and commitment to the deep joy of generative interdependence. All that we hold dear, interdependence, compassion, respect for all human beings, and stewardship of the natural world that sustains us. These are not abstract notions. If they ever were, they are not anymore. They are real values with real consequences. Real joy. The joy of our commitment. The joy of proclaiming, of being who we are, of sharing what we hold dear with the world, with our neighbors, with all our neighbors. June Jordan, the poet, said, "Our intrinsic purpose is to reach and to remember and to declare our commitment to all the living without deceit, without fear, and without reservation. We do what we can. We keep ourselves trusting, which is to say vulnerable. And more than that, what can anyone ask? Connected to joy. Let us each do what we can and then enjoy our commitment, the commitment that is us." And as I said, taking it out of the envelope, and we sang, "Hide it under a bushel, no, I'm going to let it shine. To life and love, to justice, equity, compassion, and all that we hold dear." There's joy in that commitment. Thank you.